Welcome to Career Tools. Relationships with customers. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How should I deal with customers? Is a customer always right? What's the best way to get customers to work with me? Do you want answers to these questions? Keep listening. Today, we're going to talk about our guidance relative to dealing with customers. And it's pretty simple, right? The customer is always right. I mean, everybody's heard that.
It's a bit like someone who cycles on a bike and also has a car. When they're in the car, people cycling on bikes are really bad, or pedestrians are really bad. But when they're on the bike or a pedestrian, it's the people in cars that are stupid. And it's the same with us, right? When I'm the customer, I should always be right. But when I'm the supplier, all of a sudden, the customers are annoying.
That's right. And yeah, and we're sure it's absolutely not true. So that said, there is a way, though, to deal with customers consistently and not get into the situation where you're doubting each other's truth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first part is be pleasant and cheerful, show deference, and represent your company well.
Okay. Well, be pleasant and cheerful, the first one. That seems pretty straightforward, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm talking to a supplier, I don't expect to be treated with disrespect and a surly attitude, right?
Exactly. If only when we went into the grocery store, everyone was pleasant and cheerful. And a lot of the things about the way we would want to treat our customers, we can work out by our own experience. And it doesn't necessarily matter that you're dealing with a corporation or it's two big companies and you're two individuals in it. You can still translate your experience at the grocery store or buying a car or fairly, you know, mundane transactions. You can still translate those to help you understand how to treat your customers.
And being cheerful doesn't mean acting like there's a party every day, right? I mean, if you're a supplier, you need to keep this behavior up for all 220 working days of the year. And that can be really hard, particularly if you're not the natural outgoing life of the party kind of person. And if it's too hard or too strong, you won't be able to do it. You won't be able to keep up with it. And frankly, you won't do it well. And because of that, your customers aren't going to like it a whole lot.
Exactly. And we want it to be something that's sustainable for you. So imagine though, if you walk into an office depot on any random morning and there's a guy at the front who says, "Hello, we are so glad you're here today. My name is Scott. Please let me know if there's anything I can do for you." You'd be like, "Am I in Office Depot or did I get to Disney World accidentally?" there's a level of enthusiasm which is too much for the context.
Right, yeah, contextual enthusiasm, right?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want someone who looks at you stony-faced and looks at you as if helping you is just an interruption for their day or the last thing that they want to do. But on the other hand, there's a too far in the happiness range as well. So there's a balance to be found there.
Yeah, exactly. So most people I talk to, they tell me, hey, I'm a cheerful, happy person, right? And I look at them and they have a stone cold expression. It's like looking at a statue. Their face doesn't move. There's no body movement. There's nothing. And they tell me internally that they're happy and cheerful. And yeah. Your customers aren't going to see inside your head, right? And so there are some specific things you can do to be cheerful, so that or at least engage in some behavior so that the person you're talking to or in conversing with knows, in fact, that you are cheerful.
Exactly. And so the first one is smile. And I'm sure people who have listened to all the podcasts are bored of us saying that because we say smile in so many situations. But smiling makes a huge difference on the way someone feels about your openness to helping them. And even if you're on the phone, you can hear people smiling. I'm sure as you're listening to this, you can hear when we're smiling and you can hear when we're just reading or just explaining text. There's a different tone in our voices. And as humans, we're conditioned or we're given the talent to be able to pick that up. So I was thinking about what's the appropriate level of cheerfulness? And the example I came up with was your favorite teacher. So if you left school 10 years ago and you bump into your favorite teacher in the grocery store, you would be pleased to see them. You would feel warmly towards them, but you wouldn't necessarily be over enthusiastic, because there's always a little gap between a teacher and a student, and that doesn't go away even though you get older. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. Let me ask you, like, smiling, and it's not in the show notes, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, and I apologize. But you know, if you talk to 10 people and they tell you what a genuine smile looks like, or they demonstrate a smile, you get 10 very different responses. And each of our definition of a smile can be different. I've talked to people and they say, well, you never smile. I said, he goes, like, I'm smiling right now. It's like, well, if that's a smile, I'm missing it. So some people believe a smile is just a slight turning up of the corners of their mouth, right? And other people define smile, if my mouth's not open and I don't see your bright, shiny teeth, you're not smiling. So what's a good gauge? If somebody looked at themselves in the mirror, how would they know whether or not they're in fact meeting a generally useful description or standard of a smile?
So a genuine smile, when they do research, psychiatric research on smiles, and they show people a bunch of people smiling and photos of people smiling, the way that it seems that we establish whether or not someone's genuinely smiling is that their eyes crinkle up. They're called Duchenne lines, I think, D-U-C-H-E-N-E. And it's part of the muscles of our face having to pull the lips up. And so if you look in the mirror and you smile and your eyes, the skin around your eyes crinkles, then you've got it right.
All right. There you go, everybody. Stop right now. Go to a mirror and see if you get the crinkles in your eyes. Kris Kringle. Maybe that's where this, I don't know. Never mind. Oh, it's Kringle. Kris Kringle. Kris Kringle. But I think he had the crinkles, so I think it works. So
yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Matter of fact, I can't wait to stop and go check and see whether I have crinkles in my eyes right now as we speak. Okay. So for some people, it comes naturally. And for many of us, myself included, frankly, it doesn't come natural. And we need to work at it. And just like any other skill, you work at it and you get better. And if you're saying to yourself, this is stupid, it's not me, well, I guess what? The natural you is not thought of as being friendly. Sorry, that's the way you may be. You may feel friendly. You may internally feel friendly. But if you're not smiling, other people don't think of you as naturally friendly. Great thing about it, it's easy to change. Just decide you want to and actually practice smiling. So smiling is one of those things that demonstrate friendliness or pleasantness. What are some other things we can think about?
So one of the other things is to talk with more variance in your tone. So I already, I think, do this more than most Americans. The least interested sounding voices are a monotone. So if I read that, smile more and speak with more variance in your tone, that sounds like I'm a robot. If I talk as if I were talking to a customer, I talk with a little bit more emphasis on different words. I go up and down in tone. I talk faster sometimes and slower sometimes. And that keeps people interested. And therefore, they translate that to, this person is interested in me.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. It's interesting. Mark often kids me about our older podcasts, and hopefully I've gotten better at this, but in our older podcast, if you listen, and it just drives me crazy every time I listen to it, this is what I sound like. Welcome to Manager Tools. It's like, really? It just kills me every single time. And maybe people listening say, no, Mike, you pretty much sound the same. Nothing's really changed, which would just kill me because it's so, so, so bad. But I get exactly what you're saying, and I suffer from that. I suffer from that affliction.
Yeah, and we all do. We all have days like that. I think when you put your radio voice on and you go, "Welcome to Career Tools," I always feel it. So,
okay. So I guess another thing is, it should go without saying, but we'll say it anyways. Is when you talk to customers, talking badly about the customer or anybody in the customer organization would be a particularly bad thing to do. But even talking badly about somebody within your own organization, which happens way more frequently than I would ever imagine. And guess what? You know, the customer doesn't go, oh, okay, so yeah, there's some things out of control of you, and therefore you're okay, and therefore my experience would be better. It's like, no, it's nuts, crazy.
When the flight attendants blame the ground staff for your flight being late, it's just like, you're all one company, you're representing the company, and you can't make yourself look better by degenerating or making other people look bad. It just doesn't work that way. And if someone asks you about a product that you're selling, you can't just get worse, all right? It does its job. Because the person who's buying it wants to hear some enthusiasm. They want to feel like they're making a good purchase. And part of that is your recommendation. And so you have to think about representing the company and think about what will make that person buy. And that usually involves a little bit more enthusiasm than most people put out, especially when it's not a direct sales relationship. You know, it's easy for the people who are salesmen, let's say they're photocopier salesmen, it's easy for them when they go into a purchasing department and they say, we've got 20 of the newest photocopiers and they've got all these qualities and so on. It's kind of obvious what they're trying to do, trying to get someone to buy. But as often as they do that, other people in the company who aren't in the sales department have to sell ideas or new processes or have to sell their boss for a pay rise, those kind of things. And the same behaviors work in those situations. In those situations, your boss or the other department or whoever's at the end of the process are your customers. And they need to be as persuaded as much as someone who's buying 20 photocopiers.
Right. And you talked about changing, you know, smiling more. We talked about that. You talked about speaking with more variance in your voice, using more inflections, sounding like a bloody Brit. And there's other, like, you know, tonal and vocal tics that people engage in, like sighing. If you were in front of somebody, the rolling of the eyes would be a key one. But often people go like, right? Which, it doesn't matter what the person is saying. If you hear that, you just immediately assume frustration, condescending. I mean, it's just so, like, watch those verbal tics. Now, a lot of companies, if you're doing customer service, it's kind of a general course stuff, particularly on the phone, often your calls will be recorded and you'll get some kind of feedback in terms of your stuff. But if you're not doing that kind of stuff, you know, try to pay attention or ask some of your friends or associates, do I engage in some of those behaviors? And it's amazing to me how many people engage in those kind of behaviors and are completely, completely unaware that they're doing it.
Yeah, it's amazing when we're on the video call on Fridays. It's amazing how quickly you forget you're on video and do some things that maybe you wouldn't do if you're in a meeting room.
Yeah, so, it's easy to forget, right?
So. Yeah, it is really easy. And we don't really talk about mindsets. Yeah, because it doesn't actually matter what's in your mind as long as you're doing the behaviors. And I have found that if I do the behaviors, I get into the right mindset. They become habitual and my mind changes to think that I want to do this rather than I don't want to do it. If you want to change your mindset or if you want to have a good mindset for dealing with customers, then the thing to think about is, I want to help. You don't want to think, you're interrupting my day and you're annoying me.
Right.
If you have an attitude of, I want to help, then it helps you do some of these behaviors more naturally.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty easy to get in the mindset of, I'm here to help, by simply saying to the customer, how can I help you? Yes. Or how can I help you with that? Or how can I help you solve that problem? Or whatever, right? And so that's why we don't talk about mindsets, right? Because it's hard for the customer to know that you're in the mindset. And so you have to engage in behaviors that actually send the message to your customer that you're in that mindset. And one easy way to do it, we talk about smiling and all that kind of stuff, but one way to do it is simply by the words you choose, the words that come out of your mouth. You could indicate that you're in a helpful mindset by saying, how can I help you? Or, that must be frustrating. I'm sorry. How can I help? Right? By saying, I'm sorry. I mean, We could go on and on about the words you could say, but there are words that send the right message. Okay, let's go on to your second point, which is showing deference. And for a lot of folks, that's even harder than smiling, this idea of showing deference.
I hear a lot of people say, well, we're two equal people. Why should I show deference to that person? And I think they get the idea that deference is, I'm not going to be able to say this, obsequiousness, which is fawning and exaggerated attention. There is a line in Pretty Woman where the Richard Gere character says to one of the sales associates, yes, we're going to need a lot more attention, I think, or a lot more fawning than this. And the guy says to him, well, sir, you're not only handsome, but a powerful man. I could see the second you walked in here, you were someone to be reckoned with. And then, of course, Richard Gere says, not me, her. But that's over the top. You know, if you walked into your local Ford dealer thinking you would buy a sedan, that would be weird. That level of deference would be weird.
Right.
So again, it's about finding a balance. You definitely don't need to go that far in an ordinary transaction.
Yeah, exactly. And again, deference can be signaled by things like saying, I understand, or I agree, or if I were in that situation, I'd be frustrated as well. I mean, there are certainly ways to display deference. And there are ways to absolutely send the opposite signal, which is say things like, and folks listening to this podcast would never do this, like say things like, oh, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So avoid those kind of things.
We don't want to be treated with indifference. We don't want to be treated as if we're just another customer when we're making something like a car purchase, because that's a big purchase for most people. But the person remembering your name and smiling at you and remembering what you're looking for, they give the impression, I guess, is it may or may not be real, but those behaviors signal to us that that person cares about us, or at least thinks it's important enough to use some brain cells to remember information about us.
Yeah, like using somebody's name.
Yeah.
Looking them in the eyes and saying their name, smiling, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's easy stuff, right?
Exactly. Your last point is representing your company. Now, if you're in customer service or you're in marketing, I mean, you're less likely to run into this. But I think folks that are engaging with customers and are not in an official role of customer service. And I'm thinking, now in my head, I'm thinking an IT person who happens to be talking to, you know, an internal customer, for example. They're not thinking of themselves, of the other person as the customer anymore. In fact, they are. They forget that they're representing the organization or the company and that they're simply representing themselves. And as long as I look good to the customer, I'm good. That's not true. You represent the organization if you're talking to an internal customer, or you represent the company if you're talking to an external customer. And it's not enough to look good as an individual, right? You're representing the company.
Exactly. And your feelings on the day don't really come into it. So even if you're having a grumpy day, or you have something going on in your personal life that's upsetting you, or you've just got too much workload and you're stressed, if you bring that to the table with the customer, you're putting yourself in a hole. It has a negative effect on the relationship between you and your customer. And so even though I probably won't want to tell you, pretend you don't have any negative feelings, don't bring that to the room. You can leave them outside. You can leave it on your desk. And when you call the customer, be pleasant and cheerful as if it were just any other day. And most of us can keep that up because most customer encounters are short, even if it's an hour meeting or it's an all-day meeting. As long as you have some breaks, you can probably keep down any emotion which is strong, but which you've still come to work. You know, if someone's died and they're grief stricken, then of course they won't be able to hold those emotions back, but they wouldn't necessarily be at work. Well, we probably wouldn't be at work. But if you're at work, then whatever's going on is probably at a level where you can control it, at least for the time that you're meeting the customer. Customers can be irritating and persnickety and sometimes downright stupid, at least to our point of view, because we know a bunch of stuff about the process or about what they're doing, and it seems so obvious to us. And if they're being persnickety, in my experience, that's usually about small mistakes. So if you're sending a document and you've corrected some dates, but they're not corrected all the way through the document, or if you send an email and you copy in somebody that they didn't think should be copied in, or you make a phone call instead of sending a form in, they're not huge. In the grand scheme of things, they're probably not going to make a big difference. They can be corrected, but there's some people who like to point that out, and there's some of us who don't tolerate that very well. And so the way, if you're one of the people that don't tolerate it well, like I am, one of the ways to look at that positively is to look at the process again, or look at what you did and put some kind of change in so that you do it differently next time. So you might have someone else read the document. You might write your emails without anybody in the to line and then put them in, because sometimes that prevents you sending emails to the wrong person. You might just learn that that department doesn't deal with phone calls and you have to have the form in first. And even though you wouldn't do it that way, you've learned something that will prevent those conversations in the future.
I think you're absolutely right. And I don't know that we've talked about it in a while, but if you've been listening for 10 years, you probably know that at one point I owned several restaurants. Don't go into the restaurant business. Just a word to the wise there. But one of the things that was very true, because the way we approach problems with customers, our best customers were the folks that had their first time, they had a horrible experience. They had a horrible experience, but we bent over so far backwards to resolve the customer's issue. And, you know, look, they could have had a $100 meal. And if they had a bad experience at all, we would completely refund the meal and we'd ask them to come back on us for free. We just go over backwards. And those folks became our absolute best customers. Part of the mind shift for many of the folks on our staff was starting to view, when somebody brings up a problem, think of it as an opportunity, right? And when it's an opportunity, you don't get defensive, you smile, and you're truly thankful for them bringing to your attention something that you can do better. And when you do that, it's amazing how quickly it turns around with the customer. Their expression on their face, their body language completely changes when you've convinced them that you're there to help and you're going to resolve the situation. That's my experience. I think it's incredibly powerful. Now, it's true in my, it was true in my old IT experience as well. I had a director or VP come gripe about what my organization was doing. The first thing I generally did, I wasn't perfect, but generally speaking, I'd acknowledge mistake, and then we'd jointly sit down and figure out how I was going to solve my problem, not how they were wrong or how they didn't understand what was going on, but how I was going to solve the organizational issue. And some of our worst internal customers became some of our best internal customers because I think because of that change in attitude. And so it starts with you. It's not the customer. You can't get the customer to do anything. All you can change is your own behavior. And once you engage in the behavior that we're suggesting, it's amazing how quickly things will turn around.
So if customers consistently cause a problem, try and find a solution. And a lot of times I've found when I first see what a customer is doing, I think, why on earth would you do it that way? Or why on earth would you interpret that word that way? But I'm not normal. I mean, we're all normal, but the way my brain works and the way my brain interprets words is not necessarily the same as everyone else's. And if by changing one word in a set of instructions can mean that you don't have any, or if you don't have any, or you will have less difficult conversations with customers, then why not do it?
Yeah. Customer's happier, you're happier, life is has less conflict. Yeah, I don't know. That sounds like a pretty boring life. Well, okay, folks, you know, we all have customers, whether they're internal or external, and If you don't have external customers and you don't think you have customers at all, you're wrong. You have internal customers. Look around. You'll find them. Be pleasant, cheerful. Don't make them feel like their issue or purchases is the last thing you want to do or work on. And by the way, you might want to go look at the DISC behavioral profile on our website and learn about identifying different behavioral patterns, and you'll get lots of ideas how you can improve relationship with customers. And you'll find your relationship with customers change as well as your relationships with other people within the organization as if by magic. So go check it out on www.manager-tools.com. All right, Wendy. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.